Our audience are from the different business groups. Not all are building their own products. They are working in different organizations, and they are trying to get some AI embedded into their existing ecosystem. Now, there is a pressure, everyone knows it, that, okay, I need to do something with AI. Now, either one is the problem-led approach, that you find this problem and then you start try to solve it. And then there is another one where just an AI, okay, let's find out what AI can offer, and then I will go back and re-engineer to find a problem. So any suggestion based on your experience as you are implementing it within your product, and that's you're trying to solve some specific problem for users. So any suggestion for those folks who are in this?
Welcome to the OTech Talks podcast, where it's all about working on technologies. You will hear the latest tech information, and your host, Kashif Manzoor, brings together product overviews, how-tos, best practices, tips and tricks, and troubleshooting techniques.
Welcome to OpenTechTalks.tv. Today we have a guest speaker, Denzel Adam. She's the founder of Smarty AI. And we are going to hear how AI is being used in the Smarty app. What is it, a product? What is it, SaaS? Whatever. So many questions, like audiences you have. Similarly, I'm also going to ask the same questions to Denzel. Denzel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to dive in.
Great. So Denzel, if you can walk us through, what is this Smarty AI?
Yeah, so Smarty is the product that I've been building for a couple of years now. We're trying to be your AI executive assistant in the form of a conversational calendar. So you can say things like coffee with Stella at Blue Bottle in San Francisco at London, 2 p.m. time. And the calendar event is sent to me and Stella with the right location, the right time zone. That's just in calendar management, but we're creating conversational commands for every administrative task that you do across email management, contact management, task management, scheduling links. So we're trying to be this AI executive assistant, and our main target customer today are really small business owners, freelancers, teams of one, solopreneurs, all of that.
Okay. And in which stage you are right now?
We're a seed stage. We've raised $2.5 million, and I've been working on it for a few years.
Okay. And how did this idea get started?
I came up with the idea for Smarty while I was at business school. I was feeling extremely overwhelmed just personally, professionally. I had a lot of commitments with my clubs, with my extracurriculars, with family commitments, and just also just the professional trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And I realized that the majority of my tasks that I was doing every day could easily be automated with existing technology. There just wasn't a product that allowed me to easily automate those tasks. And so I started building Smarty for myself. It started as a chatbot. I pitched it to investors while I was at business school. I got a lot of great feedback. I didn't get money, but I kept working on it on the side, and I was able to officially raise in January of 2020. In fact, the first investor I pitched to wrote our first check and was impressed, I think, with my persistence and grit.
Okay. And when it was the first check you got?
January 2020.
2020. All right. So before getting January 2020, how long you were working on it?
Well, I came up with the idea in 2018. So it was a long time. But then I didn't fully start working on it until right before, mostly 2019.
Okay. So now let's go into maybe in-depth on the Smarty itself. When you say it's an executive assistant, is it like there are a lot of other apps in the market, right? And even people are having their own executive assistants who the calendars are shared, right? And then they're managing on all that. So how it is different compared to any other just a scheduling app or maybe just a calendar or maybe an email box? So how it is different?
That's a great question. And so I'll start with the first part, which is like, how is it different than an actual executive assistant? So actually a lot of our customers are small business owners who used to have an executive assistant at their old job and now have started their own company and don't want to pay for an executive assistant. Also, the second part of it is a new executive assistant or even like a cheaper alternative, like a virtual assistant, requires years and years of training to have them understand your preferences, the way that you work. I think a big part of that investment in training someone else to understand what you like is part of the reason why people are looking for tools that empower them to do their work better and faster. And so That's why future of work tools is such a growing industry. So my background is in big tech. I was in enterprise productivity at Microsoft before going to business school. And so I already know that people prefer having tools that make them smarter and faster than delegating to someone else and waiting for them to respond. And so a lot of our users are looking not for a virtual assistant or an executive assistant, but are looking for a tool that makes them smarter. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is, of course, there's so many tools out there right now, ones that are just for making it easier to write emails, message applications that are just there for making scheduling easier, applications for just contact management, calendar management. And really a big value proposition of Smarty is this all-in-one tool. You can integrate with the APIs of other tools that you're using that are essential, but Smarty brings it all into one place, a single platform across all of the administrative tasks, contacts, email, notes, tasks, and calendaring. So that's our first big value proposition. The second one is really around this idea of conversational commands, being able to say conversationally, send this thank you note to Ash tomorrow at 3 p.m. So being able to have conversational commands for all of these administrative tasks, I think that is unique to Smarty today.
Okay. And now when you started, you said you started coding by yourself and then you pitched the idea, and now it's definitely over the last 4 or 5 years. So how you manage from coding by yourself to hiring or getting some other people to work with you? So if you can walk us through that journey, being a solopreneur where you just started alone and then you got a funding and then you started onboarding the team.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think the best advice any founder can get, and I wish I'd taken it more seriously myself, is that you should hire slow and fire fast. If something's not working, separate quickly. And if it is working, take your time to figure out if you're aligned with whoever you hire. And so that's a lesson I think I learned too late, even though I'd gotten that advice very early on. I took a long time for us to find our current team today. So we have 3 full-time engineers and 1 full-time UX researcher. And so it is. It took a long time for us to get to this 5-person team, including me. And it was a lot of trial and error. I think as a first-time founder, I have a lot of lessons that I wouldn't end up making these same mistakes if I was going to start a second startup. Given that, I think the most important thing as a founder is that you do not need to be building a prototype. You do not need to be coding in order to validate your idea. And that's the second lesson that I learned too late. There are so many ways to prototype an idea today and without writing code. And really, you should be doing that before you go all in.
Okay. And are you making money now?
Yes, we turned on revenue at the end of last year. So we're still early. Revenue is slowly trickling in, but it was something that we probably should have done even earlier.
Okay. So is it like a subscription based?
Yeah, we're a premium SaaS business. It's just a monthly subscription. We're starting off at $10 a month, which is significantly cheaper than our competitors, but we're really just trying to use it as a test to understand what are people willing to pay for and why. So that's where we are today. We used to be freemium, but we removed our free trial, just given the fundraising climate.
Okay. All right. And how you're tapping into the new customers? I mean, what are you doing to get into
it? Yeah. So it's a great question. Marketing today, I think, is really going through a transformational period. It's changing because of so much short form videos, content creations. So we are taking a strategy of both product-led growth and founder-led growth. So product-led growth is, of course, putting our current product out there, creating videos around how it works and trying to get case studies and using that to get in new users. So founder-led growth is me going to conferences, podcasts like this, posting on my own socials and talking about productivity, future of work, AI, in order to draw in the right users. And then we're also trying new features within Smarty to increase the virality of Smarty as well.
Okay. So now we will, as it's a tech talk, so maybe we'll go into some technical questions, especially when you started working and then you grew up. So how you were deciding that which technology or which development platform or where I need to host it, all those questions, how you are deciding it? Because why am I asking it? Because it will help someone if someone is trying to build some SaaS product, so it can give you your context to it.
Yeah. So I've always been a web app programmer. Even when I was at Microsoft, I was working on Yammer, which was a web app tool. And so I've always been more well-versed in that. And so I grew up, and even my thesis project in college was related to Node.js. And so our stack today at Smarty is based off React, Java, React, JavaScript, TypeScript is the library that we use. We use Tailwind for our CSS, which is a great modern CSS library. We use Vercel for quick deployments. We also use AWS. We use a lot of APIs for our AI parsing, and we are built on top of Postgres for our database.
Postgres. Okay, very good. And back to the AI part. So what are the AI capabilities you brought to the product? And before answering, was it problem-led? That, okay, there was some problem and you want to solve through the AI? Or was that led from the hype that, yes, I need to incorporate the AI?
Well, Smarty has always been an AI product. So our domain name is smarty.ai. It started, of course, I created the domain, I think, in 2019. So way before the AI hype. And actually, it's very funny. I use the same pitch today that I used in 2018. But the appetite for that pitch has greatly increased with all of the Gen AI and LLM hype. Obviously, we were pre-LLM. So we started with what I would say is almost like AI 1.0. And we're starting to layer in generative AI today and starting to build more user-based models. And so that's really the future of the company. But we were AI before the hype, which I'm proud of.
Okay. So now, what are the capabilities which you're using for AI? I mean, if you can give some examples to it.
Yeah, so the number one, of course, is the conversational commands. It's this natural language processing and then translating those natural language commands into actual backend functional changes on your administrative stack. So that is the number one use case for AI today in our product. The second big use case where we are using AI is really creating personalized recommendations for the users. So based off actions that you've taken in the past, recommending what actions you're going to be taking in the future. So today, I believe that AI is really based on three pillars. This idea of AI is being predictive, proactive, and personalized. And that is exactly what we're trying to do at Smarty. And I'll break that down exactly what that means. So when I say AI is predictive, it really means that it's looking at past data and trying to understand what you're going to be doing in the future. By proactive, I mean, based off what you're doing on the future, AI is going to try to automate those future steps that you're taking. And then the last one is personalized. Based off those future steps that AI is going to be taking and based off what it knows about you, it's going to make a very personalized choice in terms of what action it takes next. And so that fundamental principles are exactly what we're trying to bring with our recommendation system in Smarty.
Okay. And I think the linking back to the chat, the conversational interface, which you are referring it. So which tool or technology you use to build the conversational UI?
Yeah, so since we were almost like this AI 1.0, when we first started building, we started using all of these different APIs that were already open source and available in the market. And we were actually using the OpenAI ChatGPT API before it officially launched. And so we were using that to parse dates, parse locations, parse names, understand the intent of a command. And so we were already doing that. And then today we're trying to layer in the LLM models and more of a natural language. So it was very much based on using like at commands or slash commands. We're trying to get rid of that so that you can just text on your phone and have Smarty respond in the same way as you would online. And then in terms of voice, which is often a quick follow-up that we get, there are so many APIs today that allow voice to text conversion. And so we wouldn't build out that same capability within Smarty. Our AI building is really focused on creating user models using user data and creating those personalized recommendations instead. Everyone else is focusing on a better niche. And my goal with Smarty is that we are this API hub. We're integrating with all of these existing APIs to give the user the best, most cutting edge experience.
Great, great. I think approach on that one. So now let's get some experience flowing to the new SaaS builders or maybe whoever is trying to launch his product or her product. So if someone is building a SaaS product and he or she is in a very early stage where like you were coding. So here she's trying to code it. It's a very in early stage. Basic MVP is built. Now they're trying to find out the customers. So what are your some of the suggestions as you went through those all the journeys? What are your recommendations or suggestions for them, how they should be taking it up?
Yeah, for every aspiring founder who is already coding, stop. I did that. Okay. I was very much under this impression, like build and the users will come. And that is the wrong approach. We went through so many product iterations and wasted time in some ways. Obviously, I learned a lot from the experience, but I feel like the number one thing as a founder, you need to be failing fast and learning as fast as possible. And I don't think building is the best way to do it, because you are building because you're comfortable with building and you're not pushing yourself into that comfort zone of figuring out who is the ideal user, what is the ideal product form factor. When I said earlier in this conversation that it is easier to prototype and validate an idea than ever before, I really mean it. With given all the tools that are out there, if you're building a SaaS software tool, it is so easy to build Figma prototypes, to build, to do user research interviews, to build a landing page, to see what is the value proposition that you're selling and what are people interested in learning about. And so really, I think if you have an idea, the number one thing you should do, create a landing page and create a wait list to see if users come in. Run an ad or try to just organically get people to go to your website and see if people are signing up for your wait list. Curate that wait list. Reach out to the people on that wait list and ask to do user research interviews. Do those one-on-one interviews. And before you even show them a product, just try to understand what their pain point is, how much they're willing to pay for a solution for that pain point. Once you understand that, go back to them, show them your first mock-up. It doesn't have to be necessarily an interactive mock-up. It can just be static images that you're showing them and see how they talk through it. How do they use it? You can get so much information without coding at all. And once you have real confidence around, here are some users that will pay for my product, and this is exactly what my product will look like and work like, that's when you start building. And you don't even have to be technical. If you have an idea, if you have so much data and confidence about a solution, you can maybe get a user to prepay, or you can find investors who are willing to give you a little bit of money, and then you can outsource development as well. So for all founders who have an idea, whether you're technical or not technical, there's so many things you should be doing before you're coding.
Okay, great answer. So, and you touched base the one area that reach out to the users. Now, when you are doing it, is it easy to reach out a user? Are the users community is giving the right feedback?
I think the hardest part about reaching out to users is your own discomfort with wanting to reach out to them. People are so nice that if you ask them, like, can I talk to you about this problem that you have? Can I try to solve it for you? People are more than willing to talk to you. So really, I think the real issue is, like, as a founder, you have to get over this barrier. I can't talk to users, or I don't want to talk to users. Talking to users and being obsessed with your potential customers is the number one thing you can do to be a successful founder.
Great. Very good. So now, okay, so you got the user, you started building it up. Now, how you will get your first paid customer?
I think you have to be very laser focused on finding users that are willing to pay for your product, especially given the fundraising climate today. If you want to be a venture-backed startup, a couple of years ago in 2021, it was very much about growth, trying to get as many people onto your product as possible. And today it is only about profitability and revenue. That's the only thing that matters. And so you might have 100 users using your product, but the only one that matters is the one paying for it. So you have to try to find that first customer that's willing to pay, understanding why they're paying for this product, and then try to find more users exactly like that one.
Okay, great response to that one. Now, okay, maybe I'm linking back to again to the AI part. As nowadays, AI is at the right hype, the maximum hype with the generative AI and all that. And now some of our audience are from the different business groups. Not all are building their own products. They are working in different organizations, and they are trying to get some AI embedded into their existing ecosystem. Now, there is a pressure, everyone knows it, that, okay, I need to do something with AI. Now, either one is the problem-led approach that you find this problem and then you start try to solve it. And there is another one where just an AI, okay, let's find out what AI can offer. And then I will go back and re-engineer to find a problem. So any suggestion based on your experience as you are implementing it within your product, and that's you're trying to solve some specific problem for users. So any suggestion for those folks who are in this situation?
Yeah, I'd like to break it down into three parts. So the first one is, as an individual, you need to work on your AI literacy. AI is a transformational tool, and it is going to be affecting every industry, every business, every role. There is a way, it's a tool. AI is a tool. Someone I recently talked to compared it to fire. You can use it to warm your house or you can use it to burn your house down. But at the end of the day, it's just an element. AI is a tool. It is going to be used in every role, every job, every industry. And so increasing your AI literacy is the number one thing you can do to future-proof yourself as a career candidate. And the best way, I think, to do that is to take a hobby that you have, something that you love doing, and see how AI can enhance that hobby for you. So if you love playing music, look up AI composers. If you love writing, look up AI writers. If you like painting or doing any sort of art, look up Midjourney and look up how it works in terms of creating these images. Use your hobbies to drive your AI literacy and start playing around with all of these tools that are coming out. Once you start, you'll find that it's getting easier and easier to try out new tools. In terms of companies and how they're thinking about adding AI to their businesses, this is actually something that a lot of companies are struggling with right now. I went to a talk recently by Slack where they were talking about how I think 80% of C-suites in the United States are putting AI tools into their businesses, but the actual employees are not actually finding value in these tools. I think we're going to go through the short-term transition period where people are trying to figure out exactly how to use the AI tools that are out there and apply it to these jobs. But of course, as you said, C-suites are feeling a lot of pressure to make sure they're not going to be left behind. And so I think for someone who is in the C-suite and trying to understand how to bring AI to their teams, it's important to understand your team's needs and their pain points. And then instead of just like forcing AI to be used, try to find actual tools that are solving actual problems for your team. And then in terms of companies that are building with AI, I think we're in a phase where AI is really changing. For people who are already machine learning experts 2 years ago, this is new for them too. LLMs have really changed the game. So in a way, it's actually an opportunity where if you weren't an AI expert before, you have an opportunity right now to become an AI expert because things are changing so fast. And this is the time to learn so that in 5 or 10 years, you will be the expert.
All right, right. Very well described with the 3 points, I think, action item for them. Now, as a founder, what was your biggest mistake?
We already touched on it.
Okay.
It's two. It's not hiring correctly. And then the second one is building and hoping people will come instead of starting with idea validation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you mentioned not hiring early. So let's get more. How you're hiring the resources or the team? What are the key characteristics you saw?
So the way that I made a mistake earlier in hiring was very much I felt like this. As soon as I raised money, I felt this pressure like we need to build as fast as possible, which again, it kind of ties into the second part. But for me, that meant like, okay, I need to hire someone immediately to start working with me to build things out. And we were building in the wrong way and building the wrong thing. And so it took me a really long time to understand that what you need is to find someone who's excited about the product, excited about the vision, and excited about doing things the right way. And the last thing is excited to wear all the hats, because at an early stage company, you don't need just a coder, right? You need someone who's willing to be your marketer, your user researcher, your bug fixer, your QA person, your test writer, as well as also your product person. You're going to be wearing a lot of hats. And so you need someone who isn't necessarily the most experienced or even necessarily the most qualified, but someone who's very persistent and willing to learn and willing to get their hands dirty. So that was a big lesson for me in terms of like making sure you find the right fit when you're hiring someone in terms of how we hire the team today, once you find one really great hire, it's a great way to find new people is by asking them, like, who have you worked with in the past? Right. What are networks that you've been interested in? And making your team accountable for whoever they hire next, because then the new hire feels accountable to whoever referred them. And then the person who is referring someone feels accountable about, like, adding someone to the team. It creates this accountability that isn't there if you're just going out and hiring yourself.
All right. And as you were also like a developer, right? So when did you got a mindset that I need to also have a user experience or a UX expert? In which stage you got to convince yourself?
It was really early, honestly, because productivity is a very crowded space. And so one of the biggest differentiators there right now is the user experience. It is what retains users. It's what converts them immediately when they come into an application. And so even though I realized that early, it took us a long time to hire our current UX person, but it occurred to me very early on that's very important. Did I prioritize it? No, it took me a little while to prioritize it, but I should have prioritized it earlier.
All right. So before we conclude our session for today, what are the maybe a best tip from yours, from your point of view, anyone who want to start building a product or maybe any business? It's not, building a SaaS product or any business which is using the technology or maybe AI. So what are some of the top most favorite tip for him or her?
Yeah. So as I said earlier, it is easier than ever to build a prototype and to take that even further, it is easier than ever to make money on the internet today. And so if you are an aspiring founder, even if you're in high school or college, even if you're doing a full-time job, try to make money online. Try to build landing pages that draws in users who have a pain point and a need. Try to validate your ideas and see what happens. One, you'll build up the skill set that you need as a founder anyway. It's going to help you with marketing. It's going to help you with understanding how to talk to users. It's going to help you understand how to build a product. But it's something you can do for fun in your free time. It's something that you can do on the side. Even if you're in high school, you don't need to be extremely technical in order to do this idea validation. And I think everyone should work on the skill if this is of any interest to you at all to become a founder.
Okay. So now how you are balancing the coding mindset and the CEO mindset?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I don't feel like I fully transitioned into just the CEO mindset. I am still coding. I have a project that I'm going to work on today. I'm still very much involved in that way. And I think that's not necessarily a good thing. I do need to transition a little bit more to that CEO mindset, but that for me just means talking to more users, thinking about marketing more, thinking about more opportunities to get the product out there and to demo it. And that's also been very top of mind for me.
All right, Denzel, thank you so much for joining Open Tech Talks and having an open session with us. Any concluding remarks for the audience who are listening?
Please check out Smarty at smarty.ai. That's our domain name. And please connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to talk to aspiring founders about the problems and the strategies you're taking.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the OTech Talks podcast and be part of Tech Talks at otechtalks.tv. It's a turf to share ideas, insights, and